Welcome to the Library Rant with me, Ange Fitzpatrick.
And me, Stephanie Beecham.
Who's known outside the weekend also as Andy Priestner.
Hello.
It's been a little while, hasn't it?
It has, for various reasons, one of which we'll come on to later. A little sproglet has arrived. Familiar noise there for you, Ange?
Yes, it's charring, actually. It's getting right to my heart.
And I believe there was poo earlier this morning.
Yes, I cleaned poo off my baby's shoulder, and I'm so glad that that's been immortalised now. And so when he brings his first girlfriend-stroke-boyfriend home, I can forever embarrass him with that knowledge.
So will there be iTunes then, do you think, in the far future?
Oh, it'll be directly implanted into our brains, I expect, by that point.
Okay. So you'll just have to think about it, and you'll be able to hear this podcast.
Yes, while I'm in my nursing home, probably, thinking about all sorts of crazy stuff.
Okay. We're going to start this podcast with Annoying Thing of the week.
Ooh, so bad harmony. What's annoyed you there?
What's annoyed me? Well, it's what people do on LinkedIn. I love LinkedIn, as people know. I'm very passionate about it, even though I'm completely wise to them as a company and the fact that they're sharks, kind of. Well, not sharks. They just want people to use their products, get people to tweet about them and stuff, which I actually really understand. But it's their endorsements, which I think are really cool. But what really bugs me is when people endorse me for things that aren't skills. Things like library and higher education, library science. It's not a skill.
I've had history as well. Like, I am the queen of history and all of it is my domain.
And I've heard this very morning that what else can you be
endorsed
for?
Well, I was curious about it, so I dug around and started writing ridiculous things in the endorsement box. And you can be endorsed for trombone, which I'm sure is fine for musicians around the world, but also things like drinking and pole dancing.
Okay. I know someone who could be endorsed for pole dancing, and they're not of that profession. Anyway, moving on.
Swiftly on, thanks. So you can keep your job.
So if you want to endorse me, I mean, I think part of the problem is that when the endorsements come up, when you go onto LinkedIn, they say, do you know if this person has this skill? And they're always the most toppermost.
The one at the top.
That's the one. Skills that are there, which is why people, I think, click on them.
Mm.
But you can delete endorsements that you don't like that you've been pushed for, and you can put other ones up by in terms of you self-selecting them. Mm. But that's my thing.
So what would you like to be endorsed for? Have you got like a fantasy endorsement?
I would love to be endorsed for facilitating workshops, for teaching, for public speaking, because I want to move those up, because I want to do more of it. And everyone knows I'm a library manager, and everyone knows that I know about social media.
And that you excel at library and at higher education.
Yes. I'm very good at all of those things.
If you would like to endorse me for internet memes, I'd be really happy, because it's the future. Unfortunately, you know, you can do pole dancing as one of your endorsements, but lolcats?
No. There's a gap there,
there's
isn't
a massive gap there, yeah.
What a mistake.
Yeah. Well, while we're talking about new things and new bits of technology, it's time to introduce Inspector Gadget. I'm quite spoiled this week because I don't just have one gadget to show you. We had a really good teaching session that Meg, our colleague, led called 30 Things in 30 Minutes. And actually, she did 34 things in 27
That's
minutes.
That's cheating, isn't it?
I know, but it's also quite impressive. Okay. So we'll let her off that.
Did the audience survive, though, to the end?
The audience were like blown away by the content and they were really quite excited about it. So I thought I'd just share a few of the things with you. If you want to see this list in full, you can just go to our website. So that's jbs.cam.ac.uk/infolib. Or you can find it using that Google thing. So a few of the things that are really useful that I've used since then is one of them is called Print Friendly. So when you've got a web page that's got some information on it, maybe it's a news article, maybe it's a journal article, the kind of which the currency horse may bring us later, and you don't want all the ads and all the boring bits, you can use Print Friendly to produce a really easy-to-read PDF that you can print out or you can save and read on the go. So that's really useful, and it's been used actually by me this week. Rebel Mouse. Firstly, it's a new way to pull together all of your social media faces.
Have
you not?
No, I didn't go to the session. I will go to it when it's run again next week.
Yes, it is. It's by popular demand.
Yeah. So any librarians in Cambridge can come to that?
Quite a few of you are already signed up. I could name check a few of you, but I can't remember who you are. but that's not because you're not memorable. It's just because I've got a lot on my plates.
Yeah,
although I shouldn't really be eating during a recording session. Rebel Mouse. Ostensibly, it's a way to pull together all of your social media personae. So, you know, one place for all your Facebook and your Twitter posts. But if you're running a library Twitter account or a library Facebook post, you can use this to produce a magazine-style start page. Yes, and it does look a bit like the HuffPost or maybe a bit less like the New York Times, but it's quite nice and it's visual and it's got a cute mouse graphic, which always adds an extra point here.
Can I give a shout out for Calm.com?
You can. Calm.com. Do you want to explain what it is, Andy?
Calm.com is a place to go calm, and it's a .com website. That's as much as I know. No, it plays soothing music, you can plug in your headphones and you can go to your happy place for 1 to 2 minutes. I haven't done it yet. I really like the idea of it, but I haven't yet done it. But yes, it's on my list of things to do, on my scary things to do list.
Is your happy place your allotment?
It is at the moment.
Yeah.
We'll come back to that later.
We'll come back to that. Oh, no, we're trailing things. That's very bad. Oh, no, it's like we're in country file. Two more things on the gadget list. One is Google Story Builder. This went down really well with people who attended the session. Essentially, you can create a small video of people using a Google Doc, so it's, you know, you can get the typing sound of them typing things and then replying to each other. So yeah, that's a really easy way to make something that looks quite like a decent impact video. Last one. This mostly comes from my Scout hat, actually, and I recommended this to Meg. It's called nerdydaytrips.com. And it's all those amazing places in Britain, and in fact the world, that you've probably never been to and you didn't know exist. So things like the Doll Museum or The Doll Museum.
Doll.
Full of, you know, scary porcelain-faced dolls.
I don't like the idea of the Doll Museum. It's like a miserable
place. You have to queue to get in. The one I really want to visit, though, is there is a pin in the map for the square of OS mapping in the UK that has the fewest things in it. And somebody has actually researched this. It is a square of map that has two pylons in the corner.
So they've plotted your brain on an OS map.
No, there's electricity going through this.
Okay.
No. So that, yep, Nerdy Day Trips, that's our fun one.
Just to say, all of these, they are on the website, but we'll put links to these specific apps that Anne just mentioned at the end of the podcast, so you'll be able to...
Yes, I'm typing them as we speak.
Very realistic.
It is, isn't it?
Now, I've got a new machine, a new gadget, talking about gadgets, which allows me to teleport someone in unsuspectingly from somewhere else, anywhere in the world.
Oh, that'd be cool. To think of the people that we could have in this studio at the moment. We could have George Clooney.
Who would be on your wish list?
Oh, can I bring people back from the dead? That would be good.
Of course.
Yes. I would like Shakespeare to appear, just so I can find out if he had a Brummy accent or not. Because really? It would totally change my interpretation of Romeo and Juliet.
There's a poll recently, and I think Miranda Hart won it for the person you'd most like to have dinner with.
Oh, not the person you most like to bring back from the dead.
No, don't think she's on that poll. So anyway, should we try the gadget?
Should we put it on random and see who we get?
Yeah, should we do that?
Okay, turn it up to 11.
I'm excited.
Be careful.
You ready?
It's buzzing. Oh, someone's fading in.
It's the mother of heck.
It's LeMurph.
Wow, it's LeMurph. Welcome, the Murph.
Thank you for having me. I didn't have any choice in the matter.
Clearly, the device is working.
It is. It is. It doesn't have a very wide imagination. It's picked someone we both know who's nearby and local.
Okay.
I won't be too disappointed that you're not Shakespeare.
Thank you, Ange.
I'll get over it.
The sound effect was appropriate. She's come from another world.
She has.
Trinity Hall.
That's true.
What were you doing when you were rudely brought here?
Giving biscuits out, of course.
Okay.
Actually testing how far you can throw Jaffa cakes downstairs without them disintegrating.
Cutting edge research, people. See, people think librarianship is all about shushing and cardigans.
Wrong.
But it's all about biscuits.
Actually, the cardigans are quite important.
There's
one in this room.
That's true.
Don't talk about Helen like that. So it's not the first time that Helen has been in this room. She was here a few weeks ago and we did some Lego training. Andy and I are organising a conference that's coming up in a few weeks. And one of the things we wanted to do was some Lego series play activity to help our delegates sort of model how they saw their roles and how they saw their libraries changing. I don't know about you, Helen, but I found it really fun. It was bags and bags of fun.
It was great fun. It's very different. And the souvenirs at the end in particular were pretty marvellous.
Yeah, those bars of gold were really quite special.
Yeah, definitely.
I'm using mine as a doorstop.
Yeah.
And that conversation here is not at all influenced by the fact that the facilitator of the workshop was me. But the problem we have with the Lego is that people say, oh, it's Lego, it's kind of like, isn't that just messing about? And certainly when I presented a session on it with Libby Tilley at the ARLG conference, and Laura Wilkinson, shout out to Laura in Sunderland, there was a kind of reaction from some people, oh, that's just a waste of time, it's trivial. But the reality is you can get some really interesting learning. You can share stuff that you wouldn't ordinarily do if you just had a flip chart in a room. It's an opportunity to build stuff, perhaps a bit more from your self-conscious, think metaphorically rather than just what comes out of your head when you've got an empty flip chart in front of you.
Yeah, I find that was really useful. You don't struggle for ideas at all when you've got a load of bricks and minifigs in front of you, because you just start building things and the models just almost make sense themselves. So as part of our training, we took part in the exercise, so we modelled... we did some randomised brick modelling where we would pick 10 bricks and then give them to the next person. They would have to build something and then describe it.
We did, and Ange completely nobbled me with that one because she chose the bricks and she knew about the exercise in advance.
I did not! Lies, blatant lies. I chose bricks that were interesting to me because I wanted to make a space machine, and I'm sorry. You ended up...
I won't ask what that's a metaphor for.
It's my need to escape my work life. Not really, Andy. So that was Lego.
Well recovered.
It was, yeah, we all learned a lot, and I think it'll be useful for us all in the future. So thanks for running that.
Yeah, and there's lots of facilitators now in Cambridge. So.
Yeah, so if you want to do some Lego stuff.
Yeah, cool. Okay, what else we've been doing this week is continuously repeating a phrase, which is, "What are you doing, Susan?
What are you doing, Susan? Diane!
Diane!" Which probably needs some explanation if you've not been watching Watson and Oliver.
We've watched... well, I caught up with it over the weekend, and it was fantastic. Yeah. It depends on your comedy taste, but there are just so many quotable lines. And,
yeah. And even more quotable once I discovered that Ange's middle name is Susan.
Thanks for telling the world.
That's okay. So now I can say, "What are you doing, Susan?"
And I can honestly say I've got no idea.
But there's a YouTube link on the podcast, so you'll be able to watch some Watson and Oliver.
And laugh along with us.
Yeah.
Excellent. In other news, I now have a 3-month-old baby boy. His name is Joe, and he does that quite a lot, crying. But yeah, enough now, Andy. I'm getting flashbacks. He's wonderful. He's amazing. And as any parent will tell you, it makes you totally reimagine your life and recouch your views and your priorities. I'm still committed to librarianship, of course, but... he's just awesome, and he actually defies explanation as to how much he's improved my life.
Aww.
Yeah, no. So he's at home with Marcia Bowles, the wife, and she's really enjoying having him too. And because we're on record and it's public, big thank you to Lamar, who sent us a lovely present. So
it's
in
a
the
lot
future,
of love in the room.
It is. In the future, our baby will look like Maggie from The Simpsons in her starfish kind of snow outfit. So that's going to be awesome. But yeah, so baby Joe has been most of my life the last 3 months, and long may it continue.
Cool.
The other thing we've been doing is, for anyone who knows me, you'll be quite surprised, I've spent quite a lot of time playing with my hair. There's an annual thing in Libraryland called Quiff Comp, where we all try and outdo each other with the best quiffed or fin style haircut.
Although there was some disagreement about what a quiff was a few years ago.
Yeah, you definitely sported the fin.
Did I?
You did. But
did
I'm not,
I still win, though?
I'm not,
are you sore
I'm
about
not a
that
sore loser. I'm not a sore loser. Bit. No, because I won this year with a...
Hooray!
Hooray, with a fantastic kind of like Elvis-inspired quiff. And not only am I the only winner, we have another winner in the room. Because
this very room.
Technically joint winner. Oh, so shout out to Nikki of the Bouffant quiff.
You guys did some amazing things with long hair. I'm quite impressed. You know, imagine Rapunzel with a quiff. A cliff. I swear to God it was a cliff. Cut. Moving swiftly on. We've been saved.
I hope so.
Oh, it's a currency horse.
What have you got in your mouth, currency horse?
Oh, it's a rather soggy-looking article from the HBR.
He's been chewing the article again. He's obviously not getting enough oats.
Yeah, there's not enough fibre in his diet. So this article is called How to Give a Killer Presentation, and it's really talking about the TED style of delivering a talk. So using image-heavy storytelling methods. It's quite a long article, but as I was reading through it, I kept finding points that I could tick and say, yep, that's what I think, yep, that's what we do. Andy and I actually did a presentation on how not to fail at PowerPoint.
Yeah, that was interesting because we thought it was the best presentation we'd ever done. And we were really a bit too pleased with ourselves. And we presented it. Loads of people left saying, yeah, it's really good and I couldn't put it back myself. But there was about four or five people who gave it like 6 or 7 out of 10, yeah. Which we kind of were very hard on ourselves and we were quite upset.
Mm.
And I think it's just because it didn't match with what they are traditionally taught about PowerPoint. And I guess when you get traditional PowerPoint teaching, it's all about stuff like you must repeat things again and again so they go in. You must go through your objectives in great detail at the start. And actually, we disagree with some of this traditional approach, don't we?
Indeed, indeed. And in fact, most of what we were pulled up on was our finance student saying, I mean, your presentation was great. It's fantastic. I'd love to use the big images behind me. I'd love to tell a story. I'd love to move around the room. But if I'm in front of a CEO, they will laugh at that. I need bullet points. I need numbers. And one of the points that's raised in this HBR article is particularly about talking to people in finance. And they say, I'm going to quote it, financial audiences love data and they want the details. So satisfy their analytical appetite with facts, but add a thread of narrative to appeal to their emotional side. Then present the key takeaways visually to help them find meaning in the numbers. And I couldn't really say it better. When you're faced with a load of numbers, even if you love numbers, it's difficult sometimes to see the argument of the person delivering the presentation. Mm-hmm. So if you can create a narrative that pulls it all together, not only are you delivering the facts, but you're also pushing your own agenda, which is exactly. Which is great.
And another bit that I want to read out. We all know that humans are wired to listen to stories, and metaphors abound for the narrative structures that work best to engage people. When I think about compelling presentations, I think about taking an audience on a journey. A successful talk is a little miracle. People see the world differently afterwards. I really agree with that. We're always talking about telling stories here at Judge. What do you feel about that, Helen?
Well, one of the metaphors I liked that it brought out was about the detective story.
Mm.
And one of the things that struck me about that was sometimes in detective stories you get the culprit right at the start, so you get the end result right at the beginning. And actually that's a different kind of narrative than the one where you get the end result at the end.
That's the Roger Ackroyd approach.
Yes.
Sorry.
Absolutely. It's better than the Midsommar Murders approach.
They're just mad in Midsommar Murders. They just kill because they're mad, don't they? Anyway.
This will all be footnoted, by the way.
But I thought that was an interesting way of looking at how narrative doesn't necessarily mean wants to have a start point and end point. Right. You can actually mix it up a little bit.
Yeah.
And maybe if you want to bring in data, that can be part of that.
Mm.
Yeah.
I think when you're working with data, and I had a conversation with someone about infographics yesterday, and we both agreed what was great about it was that you could pull your own path through it. Because when you have an infographic, or you're showing data on a slide, you don't have to start at the beginning and go through to the end. You can look at the bit that's important to you or the bit that interests you. So in a way, you can create a sort of choose-your-own-adventure by making different start points available at each time.
Mm-hmm.
And it's complicated. And that's one of the things that they do say. It does take a bit of time. It does take a bit of planning.
There's a lot of emphasis on rehearsal. And it made me think, actually, do I rehearse enough? That's what it made me think. That's what I came away thinking. Because I'm not saying you should learn by rote at all. And one thing I want to mention that we keep saying to each other in the office, the real wiki man Ned Potter was saying in a blog post recently, you can't be derailed if you're not already on the tracks. So the point being, you know, if you try to learn something parrot fashion and you've got loads of notes for it, then, you know, you could go wrong and you might be stuck. It's better to know the stuff and then therefore present from that.
Mm. Yeah, yeah. The other side point to that as well is about appearing fresh and being ready to improvise and also to sound real. One of the things that we talk about a lot at Judge is about being real and being honest. And just three little pithy bits. Don't force it. Don't orate. Just be you, because your audience can tell when you're faking it. The audience can tell when you're trying to sound more important than you actually want to be. Not that we'll get any experience of that.
No.
Yeah.
I also like the stuff about nervousness. It says, in general, people worry too much about nervousness. Nerves are not a disaster. The audience expects you to be nervous. It's a natural body response that can actually improve your performance. It gives you energy to perform and keeps your mind sharp. Just keep breathing and you'll be fine. I'm not sure about just keep breathing and you'll be fine. You need a bit more than that. But I've always thought it's good to be nervous, and that kind of confirms that.
Mm. To sort of back that up, something that Susan Cain in her presentation on the power of introverts says it's about not reading things as well. And when you're nervous, that's the thing that you tend to do. You either use your slides on your screen as a prompt and read everything that's on them, or you just speak into your into your cards. That doesn't engage your audience. That doesn't make it feel like a performance, which is what it should be. Mm. We regularly do some teaching sessions for our MBAs in the Michaelmas term, and we do it as part of a larger group teaching project. So there'll be a presentation before us and one after us. And we've consistently heard from our MBAs that when we go in and we do something with images, we do something with just a few words on the screen, and it's mostly about us talking and communicating.
And humour.
It's such a break. It's such a different thing from having just lots of facts and lots of figures. It makes them feel comfortable and they can sit back and they can actually listen to us and take it in instead of scribbling everything down that's being said. So really don't underestimate the power of almost silence and almost not making any notes. Just let them absorb your performance, I think, is what I'm saying, rather than sort of force it on them.
Anything to add, Helen?
No, I think that's a good point. I think the thing about performance is particularly important because you're almost acting. You're acting as yourself, but you are acting. And I think if how much actors rehearse, they can manage to rehearse time and time again, and it still seem fresh. Good actors can.
Yeah.
So I think seeing it like that, rather than seeing it as some terrifying, prospective audience who are going to be hanging on your every word, just changes your focus slightly and probably helps, especially with nerves.
Yeah.
Indeed.
Time has ended for you, my friend. So we have to stop now because time has changed. If you're not from 1980s world like I am, you might not recognise that kind of bell toll, but it's to remind you that on Challenge TV here in the UK, on a weekend evenings from 10 o'clock, you can watch Nightmare, which is being rerun. Now, Nightmare was probably my favourite children's TV programme in the world.
Not your favourite?
Yes. Okay. Definitely.
It's no Funhouse, was it?
Funhouse.
This is a home. I'd have rather been on Nightmare. And I always wondered if they practice by standing in their kitchen with a bucket over their heads, with their friends directing them left and right.
Probably. They were like that.
They were. Maybe with a wooden spoon held out.
Mm-hmm. I sense these two have got an idea for what they're going to do this afternoon.
Spellcasting.
It was always about, more to the left, a little bit to the right. That was kind of all the discussion
and
was,
I'm standing
wasn't it?
There shouting at the TV going, say sidestep.
Yeah, exactly.
But it's made a little bit of my childhood come back, and that makes me very happy. So, yeah, that's what I'm watching when I'm not watching Watson and Oliver or my baby.
I think we're now going to go to Helen to talk about what she came here to talk about, even though she wasn't prepared because we teleported her in randomly. This is where that doesn't make sense
she's
anymore.
Kind of, yeah.
It's she's okay, they probably figured it out. Give them some credit. Although if they're still listening at this point, give them less credit.
Rude.
I'm just striking you off my Christmas card list.
Yeah, like you send Christmas cards.
Can we get back to the librarian podcast thing?
Yes, well, those of you who are librarians, you will know that Silip has embarked on a rebrand scoping project, I think, still in the early stages. And as part of that, last week they sent out a survey to all its members, which was particularly remarkable for its, I'm going to be polite here and say, I can't think of a word. That's polite. Abysmal. Let's go with. Let's be honest.
Sit on the fence there. Yeah.
Thanks. It wasn't the best thought out plan.
Yeah. Can we read them out? The names that were suggested. So I think we need a drum roll for this, don't we? At least. Have you got one? Oh, there we go. Fantastic. Well, that's a long
drum
roll.
Quite a long drum.
Talk amongst yourselves. There we go. Information UK. Information Professionals UK. InfoPro UK, the Information Association, the Knowledge People, or Information Matters UK. Vote now. What did you vote? Did you vote?
I can't remember, to be honest, but I remember one of the problems that's come out of this, one of the things that's been mentioned a lot, is the lack of the loss of the L word. None of those includes library, which is the new L word.
Just to clarify. What a gay day.
So library has been struck off, and I know a lot of people are very cross about this, and they think library should be there. I'm pretty certain that the two people sitting in the room with me don't care at all if library is mentioned.
I don't know.
I
go back and forwards on that. I wrote a blog post a few years ago about how I go through periods of about 7 or 8 years when I'm happy to be called a librarian, and then 7 or 8 years later I'm happy to be an information professional.
Yeah.
I've actually just gone back towards information, but I can see the value of the library word.
Well, it's just a word that's familiar. Actually, librarians are information professionals. I would say that's the umbrella term, and in the way that I'm definitely a librarian, I'm not an information manager.
Yeah.
But information manager comes under the same term, under the same umbrella term. So I'm not too bothered about the loss of library, but it is familiar. And one of the purposes of the rebrand was to make SILIP into something that was more obviously accessible to people who weren't part of SILIP. And the loss of library probably doesn't help.
No, just 2 points that I want to bring is that the names that have been suggested sound like they could be government departments or think tanks. And also, when you acronym them, I don't know if anybody at SILIP thought about this, but you can have IPUC and IMUC. I don't want to have an IPUC card. Or be part of IPUC, generally. No. And it's just asking for GINFOPRO.
It is really.
For InfoPro. But the other thing I want to bring up is that I'm really glad that, in a way, that SILIP is trying to move away from the current branding and naming, because...
But they haven't talked about that. They've talked about the name.
No.
They've talked about the logo.
But the logo...
Oh, they have talked about them, so I'm sure somewhere they've talked about the logo.
The logo really annoys me.
What's the talk about the logo before we hear Andrew's view on it?
Change the colours, I think.
Right.
Yeah. Change the serifs or just the colours?
I just saw colours.
Okay.
What do you see when you see that logo, Andrew?
I had to share this today. I think it looks like a feminine hygiene product, to be perfectly honest. I think the little sort of pinky red sort of wiggly thing and the serifs and the soft lettering, I just think it doesn't scream modern, forward-thinking library and information professionals.
I think it's very feminine. As a very butch, masculine guy. Sorry, wait for the laughter to subside. But also, I mean, that's my problem with the lilac. Lilac's always purple. And I remember just taking the printout to my boss, and he said, "Is this a gay conference?" That was his response.
For gay librarians.
For gay librarians. I'm like, it's just a library's conference. But the colour is important.
Yeah.
And there is a gender issue there.
Yeah, but it's not dynamic. It's not any of the colours that you would choose for dynamism.
No.
Or for solidity or heritage or anything like that. I'm not really sure what pink is supposed to, what kind of pinky reddy is supposed to signify. So I think we're a bit disappointed in that. And so is Twitter. There's been all sorts of furore on there, and that's been kind of pulled together with an article that was in the bookseller this morning, which quotes a few tweets and sort of begins to...
What does it begin to do, Anne?
It begins to reduce it. I'm thinking in cooking terms. It begins to make it more concise for people.
Concentrated.
Yeah, so if you want a good introduction to the story, try the bookseller article. And then it just goes on. There's a very long piece by Phil Bradley on it, on what he feels about the response from people.
And
on
Tom
media.
Roper on his blog has asked for a special meeting to be called, requisition for a general meeting, so we can talk about this rebranding exercise. So go to that web blog and you'll be able to see what he's having to say about that, and maybe you want to sign up for that.
It's all going on, isn't it?
It is a bit. I mean, I just think it's... The problem isn't to do with the name, it's to do with the baggage that we have as librarians about perception, but it also is, quite frankly, due to the throwbacks that exist within the profession. There, I've said it.
I think you're right.
So...
And nobody else would say it apart from you, to be perfectly frank.
Have you got anything to add before we leave the SILIP pre-brand discussion?
I think you've said everything that we need to say.
Okay.
And I need to distance myself from his views.
Oh my God! We have become a government department. We're distancing ourselves from these views.
Right. What do we have next?
And we have not very much time.
Well,
so
we'll skip point 13. There's been 13 points so far.
I know. I might have to skip number 14.
Really?
Actually, very quick. What are you going to do this weekend?
I'm going to strim my allotment.
That sounds fantastic.
That would have been better if I'd had more time to explain the ethos of that.
I'm sorry about that.
Okay, we're saying goodbye.
This has been The Library Rant with Anne Fitzpatrick,
Stephanie Beecham,
and Lamar.
Thank you. Tune in next time.